I didn't think I was a yeller until I became deeply struggling with parenting. He would flip out and I would flip out. Yelling like yelling. Not the kind where, and I even had people say, you know, yelling is not an effective parenting strategy. I'm like, I know that. This is not yelling. This is like, I've been lit on fire and mom rage just came out and I don't know where this came from. I have never yelled like this in my entire life. I've scared myself. I am scared of myself right now. That kind of yelling. And of course, there's a ton of guilt around that.
Welcome to the Mama I Hear You podcast, stories for moms by moms. I'm so happy you're here. I'm your host, Jamie Evans, and I have two boys, 4 and 7. This is a place where we can all connect and support each other by sharing our stories about all the things that come with motherhood in the early years. From the times that feel incredibly hard to the times that make you laugh out loud, no topic is off limits. So warm up your coffee again and let's get started. Today's episode is a little bit different. Instead of a story, it focuses on how it feels for a mom raising a neurodivergent kid who has these big, intense emotional outbursts pretty regularly, and often about what seems like the smallest things. She'll talk about her feelings of anger, guilt, isolation, and doubting whether she's even a good mom at all.
My name is Megan Champion. And I am a 15-year elementary school teacher and a mother of 3. I have 8-year-old twins and a 5-year-old. One of my 8-year-olds is neurodivergent, and I didn't even know what this word meant years ago.
Her 8-year-old twins are a girl and a boy. Megan will be talking about her 8-year-old son. For listeners who may not know, neurodivergent is a term used when someone's brain processes information a little bit differently. Her son is also gifted and highly sensitive, which means he has an increased sensitivity to physical, emotional, or social input. Every day, there were upsets about something. Between the ages of 1 and 7, her son would scream for at least half an hour, multiple times a day. For the longest time, she tried to figure out how she could make things better, and she just couldn't do it.
He was just dysregulated, and it was a whole lifestyle. There were bouts of, you know, better times, and then there were bouts of times where it was worse.
When her son was 6 and in kindergarten, things were really tough.
It was that kindergarten year right before COVID that was worse. There was a massive meltdown just upon opening his eyes every single morning, and a massive meltdown the moment he got off the school bus, and a massive meltdown right before bed. Rinse and repeat. And they were big and they were long. You're talking 2 to 3 hours a day of screaming out of his mind because something is dysregulated inside of him. He was miserable and we were miserable. And it was constant walking on eggshells in our home and just dysregulation everywhere. My other children were off because of it. It was just a nightmare.
Here's an example of what Megan means when she says meltdown.
So when my child was 3, barely 3, I had him and his twin, and I also had a 6-week-old baby. And we were trying to go to the beach, meet up with my colleagues. I was by myself trying to nurse while walking around and packing a beach bag, like just, you know, total chaos. And the twins were eating a waffle with peanut butter spread on it. And my son got in his little chair and started screaming, looked at his waffle, just absolutely freaking out, shaking. This kid is barely 3. What's the problem? And he wasn't able to verbalize, but he was able to point and sort of show me that the way that I spread the peanut butter on the waffle was not perfect. And he flipped. And I was stressed already. Trying to get us to the beach on time and with my newborn in my arms, and I had no idea what to do. I thought one of those traditional parenting rules is like, send your child to a calm space so they can calm down on their own and come back when they're ready. I brought him up to his room. And I was like, okay, this is a nice quiet space. You need to calm down here. As soon as you're calm, you can come back out.
That totally didn't work.
I kept the door open first. And then he's running back out. I'm like, oh, this isn't what the manual says. Like, whatever manual. He's supposed to stay there. It's supposed to be a calm down space. Like, you're supposed to calm down, kid. But he's screaming and screaming and screaming. And honestly, the sound of the screaming is ear piercing. It's like he's being lit on fire or something. But all it is that his peanut butter isn't right. So I put him back in his room. He runs out the door again. This is a problem. What do I do? I am holding a newborn. I don't want anything to happen to him if I drop him or, you know, all the anxiety comes out. So I shut the door. Well, he opens the door. So shut the door again. I'm now holding the doorknob and he started running into the door, throwing his whole body into the door. I'm like, he's going to break the door. And worse than that, he's going to get hurt. Oh my gosh. So open the door back up. I'm up the stairs, down the stairs, back up the stairs, back down, back up. My daughter's trying to eat her waffle. I'm like making sure she's okay. It's a hot mess.
Megan decided to try something else. It was a beautiful sunny morning, so she thought maybe some fresh air might help him. She puts him out on her deck, which has a sliding glass door, and she's staying right by the door so she could keep an eye on him while also making sure his 3-year-old twin sister was okay, and of course, all while nursing the baby.
He was trying to come inside. I'm like, no, you need the fresh air. That will calm you. You need sunshine. Just stay there. Just calm down. And he took his little 3-year-old body and tried to flip all my deck furniture, table, chairs, while screaming, of course. And so by this time, I'm crying.
She can't stop the meltdown. So she just decides, okay, we have people waiting for us. We are just going to move forward and head to the beach.
And I'm carrying him football style out to the car. And that's when my elderly neighbor walks over. We were not.
That's the worst.
Oh, the worst. I didn't know him really at all. In fact, I couldn't even tell you his name. And he comes walking up the driveway and he says, is everything okay? He's giving me a look. He's doing a welfare check on my kid. And I don't blame him because my kid has been screaming for almost 2 hours. And I'm football holding him while he's crying and I'm crying. I was so embarrassed. And I just said, yeah, he's okay. He's struggling. But he does this sometimes, but we're fine. We're going to the beach. What do I say?
45 minutes later, Megan arrives at the beach with her kids, pulls out the sticky peanut butter waffle she'd packed in a Ziploc bag, hands it to her son, and he wolfs it down. After that, he's totally fine.
That's what I mean when I say meltdown.
That's a good one, for sure.
It was.
Did you see your neighbor again after that? Or was he always, like, has he always been kind of like the elderly neighbor that just kind of looks over at you? Are you still neighbors?
No, we're not still neighbors. We moved. We moved a couple years later. But anytime we were outside after that, like, it was so bad. I was trying to smile extra big and be extra lovey. Come here, my sweet child. I love you so. Everything's fine. I'm a great parent. I'm a teacher. Please, trying to prove myself. And it just sucks. It's just a crappy place to be, you know?
Yeah.
Megan was stuck. At one point, she even thought
he would be better off with another mom who understood him better, who didn't lose her cool.
And when her son would have these huge emotional reactions, so would she.
I didn't think I was a yeller until I became deeply struggling with parenting. He would flip out and I would flip out. Yelling. Not the kind where, and I even had people say, you know, yelling is not an effective parenting strategy. I'm like, I know that. This is not yelling. This is like, I've been lit on fire and mom rage just came out and I don't know where this came from. I have never yelled like this in my entire life. I've scared myself. I am scared of myself right now. That kind of yelling. And of course, there's a ton of guilt around that. He did not trust me at all because I might snap and scream at any minute. And actually, I used to, gosh, just so pathetic, honestly, looking back at it, but I was so mad at myself for losing my cool when he would lose his cool that I started waking up in the morning and saying to myself, okay, yesterday you didn't yell once. Let's go for day two. And I started like a daily countdown. It's been 3 days since I last lost my cool, or 3 days since I last yelled. The problem was when I would fail and trip up and start back at zero.
Along with the guilt from yelling, she started to feel alone. Megan would try to see friends and take her son out on playdates, but it just wasn't working. She got to a point where she didn't even want to talk about what was happening with her son anymore.
I mean, I see my friends. We meet up for playdates where their kids happily adjust to the rules and go off and play, and there's no problems. I realized that my friends, their kids were not like mine, and my colleagues' kids were not like mine. Those feelings are super isolating because I just sat around and I thought, nobody feels like I do. I just stopped talking about it. You know, someone would say, how was your weekend? And what are you going to say? Like, we had a massive meltdown at Target and people were judging me and looking around, and I was red-faced and sweating. And then he came home and was trying to slam his body into the door because he was so angry and hit his sister.
How are you?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Nobody wants to hear that. Mostly because it makes people feel uncomfortable, because it is uncomfortable. And so instead of it's like, it's fine, how is yours? Like, whatever, whatever. I can't even have this conversation. And it's depressing.
Along with feeling really alone in parenting, she started to doubt herself and whether she was even a good mom at all.
In addition to those feelings of anger that I had and the guilt that I had, there was also shame. There was also doubt, a lot of doubt. I am a teacher and I worked in daycares and I worked in preschools and I know children. I majored in this in college. I've done nothing but work with children my entire life and I can't raise my own kid. Wow, what a terrible mother. I suck. Like, I am the worst. I'm a terrible mom.
Megan was online one day looking for something that might point her in the direction of what to do. And she came across a Facebook post about a kid who was having really big meltdowns. This led her to a group where she finally found people who seemed to at least get her experience.
Moms were saying similar things that I was going through. And while there was no personal connection, at least I was reading from a mother, this is what we're struggling with. And it matched my kid. And I was like, what? I got to show my husband, like, look what I found. You're never going to believe this. I can't believe it. When you finally find someone who has a child like yours and is struggling with those same feelings, it is a complete game changer, because I truly did not believe anybody else in the world had a kid like mine and doing such a terrible job as I was with that.
Megan initially thought that more or less she'd just be able to tell her kids what to do and they would mostly listen.
What was your version of motherhood before you became a mother?
That's such a good one. It's such a good question. What did I think this was going to be like? I think that I thought that to raise respectful, compliant, happy children, that all I had to do was exert my authority over them. I wanted to do this in a kind way, but it still was like, I'm the mom and you were the child and you will listen to me because I know what's best for you and this is what you're going to do. And if I say go clean your room, you'll go clean your room. And honestly, this is kind of how I was as a child. I wasn't perfect, you know, but there was a lot of whining. But I still complied because that was expected and that made my parents happy. And I wanted to make my parents happy. So I was totally fine following every last rule. And so I assumed that good parenting is just replicating the way that I was raised. And I think this is generational as well. But when you get the vibe that compliance and direction following and constant manners and a pleasant tone equals good kid, then that's what I thought. I would have children just like me. We all want what's best for our children. But when you are raising a kid who doesn't fit the model of what you thought parenting was going to be like and motherhood, then you're left scrambling to try to raise your child to be happy and healthy and safe, and you don't know how to do it.
She tried all the things, all the parenting tricks and tips and strategies to help her son be able to manage his emotions and stop having these outbursts.
So then we try something else that the books say and that the internet says, oh, just do this. Okay, we'll try that. Also did not work. Well, what about this and this and this? Okay, we try all the things.
And now do the opposite.
Right. It's like those books where when you're a kid, like Goosebumps, and you have to create your own journey.
I love those.
Yes, flip to page 94. If no, okay, well, we flipped that book inside now, upside down, you know, all of it. And none of those things work because my child does not fit in the box. So neither will our parenting strategies.
Here's what happened when she tried the positive parenting approach.
What ended up happening with my positive parenting attempt is that he was walking all over me, literally, actually, and would be aggressive and all kinds of things. And I would be like, okay, honey, I hear that you're upset now, but you can't hit me. That was not working for my kid. And it wasn't working for me. And as I'm sitting there while he's crawling all over me and, you know, smacking me, I'm going, what? Something's wrong here. Something is very wrong. It was the way the gentle parenting book said to do it. It was the way social media said to do it. So when I'm using my sing-song voice, okay, that voice is actually a trigger for him. And he cannot stand hearing that sort of tone from me. It makes him feel less than. It makes him feel patronized is really the best word. But on the flip side, the authoritarian traditional style, well, that's not me either. So none of the strategies work. That's the real answer. And that's what I was saying before is that there is no secret sauce. There are no parenting styles that work. And so every mom, especially when you're raising a neurodivergent kid, but any mom in general, you've got to carve out your own path.
And that's exactly what Megan did. If we go back to that kindergarten year when things were at their worst with her son, Megan finally figured out what works, kind of by accident. It's March 2020 and the world shuts down due to COVID. Megan is instantly at home with her husband, twin six-year-olds who are pulled out of kindergarten, and her two-year-old 24/7. No more rushing off to school. No more rushing off to sports or play dates or activities. In fact, just no more rushing.
It was kindergarten, so it wasn't like they were jumping online for much schooling. So we got to press pause on everything. We were all caught in this sort of rat race of life. And it wasn't fulfilling me. I was dysregulated too. We were all at home. And I was using Spotify channels of like peaceful guitar music and like really chilled out. There were no more sports. There wasn't school. Not only that, but I was taking him outside and spending quality time with him where my brain was clear too. I wasn't caught up in 5,000 things with my own work or whatever. I got to watch him become curious and fascinated by life. For example, we have a little stream in our yard. So every spring there are frogs. And I remember when COVID, when you know things first shut down, that was March. So by like May, June, we were settling in. And every morning we're going outside. He's holding my hand because he's still a kindergartner. And he's so sweet. And we're walking over to the stream with my other kids, of course. And head over to the stream and listen and wait. And then hear a ribbit and go look for it and count frogs. There's one, there's one, there's one. And he is lighting up. That kind of attention and presentness helped him big time, but it also helped me.
Megan figured out that a couple of big things had to change in order for her son to be able to have more control over his emotions. And one of those things was Megan. She learned that regulating her own emotions and stress level helped her son regulate his as well. And they needed chickens.
I found inner peace and I found that sense of, oh, this is what I need. I need nature. I need quiet. I need chirping birds. I need sunshine on my face in the morning. There's these things that I need, and it was making me a calmer and happier person that was a big piece for him. Seeing me regulated, calm, happy, loving, come sit with me, let's read together. There's nothing else we have to do in our day right now. Want to learn about castles? Great. Let's order those books from the library. We have to drive by and pick them up because it's COVID, and we'll bring them home and let's just do a deep dive of castles. We raised chickens, like we're not chicken people, and then we got chicks and the kids helps to take care of the chicks and gather the eggs. Those meltdowns that he was having, those three times a day, big, big meltdowns, almost immediately stopped. Immediately. Because we just slowed down. It was like, oh, wait a minute. Those behaviors that I was seeing, that we were seeing, struggling with for so long, I mean, years, every day for years, that wasn't really who he was after all. Who knew? There's actually this other child who's wonderful and loving and sensitive, but in the best way. I couldn't see that because I was too busy trying to use my authority to get those behaviors to stop. And I missed it. I got to figure out what his triggers actually were, certain sounds and certain situations and changes in routine and whatever. But I didn't know that until I really got a good look at him. And I couldn't do that until we were all forced to be home together 24/7. Yeah. Because here's what he didn't want to do. He didn't want to rush off. He was constantly, are we going to miss the bus? Is the bus coming? Oh my God, we're going to miss it. Ah! Just losing his mind just over that one thing. He didn't want to rush off to sit in a classroom for 7 hours doing work that was, perfectly reasonable, but for him, it wasn't. Thrown into a social situation of recess where there's 20 screaming children in his class all running around at the same time, and he has to figure out how to make friends with the sensory overwhelm and the social dynamics, and no.
I mean, that sounds awful to me.
Right? Same. How do we survive? I don't know. I don't know. He didn't want that. It's like, can we as parents, and sometimes the answer is no, but can we try to meet our children's actual needs? Because that lifestyle of rush, 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 here, there, change for this sport, go to this play date, run here, run there, was not working for him and his sensory issues, overwhelm, highly sensitive, perfectionism, anxiety, all of his pieces. None of that was working. And it turned out none of it was working for me either. And that's why we both happened to sort of stumble upon that happiness at the same time.
Here's where they are now.
Our entire relationship has changed for the better in the past, like, year and a half, 2 years. Obviously, COVID has been a nightmare for so many people and turned lives upside down. But there was a little silver lining for us in our home. I got to see that my child didn't have to melt down three times a day, didn't have to be his normal. That now we could figure out how to make him happy, essentially. Like, what was it that was bringing him inner peace? The trust has been reestablished, and I'm just glad that we were able to do it sooner rather than later. I know who he is as a person, and he knows that I know who he is as a person, and he feels deeply respected and trusted. And that's been huge. It's been everything. I never yell. I never. And it's not because my kids don't drive me bonkers, because they do, because they're children, and that is normal. But it's because I'm coming from a deeper place of inner peace and acceptance for myself as a mother of a neurodivergent kid, and for who he is. And all of my children, for who they are. When you get to that place and you don't have to parent out the behaviors or whatever, and it's just deeper, then there's nothing to yell about. I mean, there's just nothing. I don't lose my cool. It's a shift, a massive shift.
Now that Megan has shifted her perspective, when a behavior comes up that she doesn't like, instead of going to what she can do to stop the behavior, she's more focused on what's causing it in the first place and how she can best support her son.
I work every day on internally separating my child's behaviors and challenges and seeing the real him underneath all of that and digging deeper for the root cause. Okay, I'm hearing disrespect right now, and this is a big meltdown that I'm seeing happen. I don't like these behaviors. Nobody likes them. And my immediate reaction is to want to take charge, go to your room, or go take a break. You may not speak to me that way, blah, 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 blah. And that's still, I think that all the time. But if I'm not happy with these behaviors I'm seeing, well, neither is he. And at that moment, they're out of his control. So by getting angry about them and letting him know that I'm disappointed in him, I'm already beating him down, not actually, but...
thanks for the clarification.
I did not put my hands on my children. But by saying, I am so disappointed in your behavior, I go, like, you need to go to your room, whatever it is. I mean, he's already on the ground, you know?
Right. He's already feeling horrible.
Yeah.
He needs that extra, just like, I'm here, I love you. Yeah. Not a fan of the behavior, but like, you're amazing.
Yes. And I can't tell you how long it took me to realize that. Way longer than it should have, unfortunately.
How do you feel like looking back and knowing that he was there kind of all along and he just needed this shift?
Oh my gosh. I love it. I love it. There's definitely guilt, of course. The relationship, we did lose a piece of that for those years. But that's another thing that I'm working on and trying to talk to other moms about too. We can't live like this. So I feel a little guilty, but I'm letting that go for the most part because I don't know, no time like today, you know? Right.
Yeah.
We just do the best we can and that is enough. It really is.
How'd you get there? Like if a mom's sitting out there going, man, I'm in that yelling phase, how'd she get there?
Oh gosh. So honestly, the number one way that I would say to get there and to get to that inner peace of parenting a neurodivergent kid is community. Of all things, it's community.
About 10 months after the initial COVID lockdown, so in January 2021, she started a podcast. It's called On the Hard Days, and it's all about sharing stories from other moms who are also raising neurodivergent kids.
The Facebook groups helps at least knowing that they were out there somewhere, but I still didn't have the personal connection until I started my own podcast. I mean, that was the beginning of my change and launched my own community for exactly the type of moms that I was looking to befriend and couldn't find them. I desperately needed other mothers who understood what I was going through. And now I found them. And it's amazing. It's the best thing ever. Every mom, especially if there's a mom listening who resonates with what I've been saying, that mom needs to make sure she has a support system. And it cannot be from well-meaning friends and relatives who don't understand, but they love you. So that's great, but that's not what I mean. I mean people that you can text or call at any time and say, hey, this is what we went through today and I need to vent and not be judged for it and be fully understood, that kind of community. And I truly believe that was my ticket out of my own head. And if moms don't have that, they need to get it because it will change the way you look at yourself once you realize, oh, she said this happened to her last week. Wait a minute. So it's not my fault. So I didn't do something wrong. I am a good mom. Like, who knew? You can't get there without personally having conversations with other moms going through it. I can personally promise, because I have now seen it myself again and again and again and again, that somebody else out there understands. Finding that person is the magic. Finding the friend changes the whole thing. It's total, total game changer.
Thank you for listening to Megan share about her experiences with raising her son. If you are raising a neurodiverse child and want to create some friendships with people who might relate to your experience, Megan has built a support group community called Mothers Together. Following, Megan and I talk about the Mothers Together community for those who want to learn more.
Imagine that each mom has their name in the middle of a spider web, and their first people their home base, that's their pod squad, those moms have specific things in common with them. I ask questions ahead of time, like when they first join. And so perhaps the age of the child is similar. Perhaps they have a diagnosis that is similar, or perhaps they don't have any diagnosis at all. Perhaps they're both homeschooling. Perhaps they're not, whatever, a bunch of different factors. And that home base, which is on the smaller side, like 6 to 8-ish moms in that pod squad, they all have commonalities, despite the fact that they have not met in real life. It took hours, minutes to bond, because as soon as the stories come out, it's like, oh my gosh, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. I cannot believe you know what this is like, what I'm about to say. Instant, deep, deep friendships right then and there. From there, after those moms get really comfortable, they make those friends, that's the initial, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this. Let's talk all day, every day. You're my new best friends. That feeling, that level of excitement and connection. From there, moms have the opportunity and mothers together to expand their spider web. So if they go to a psychologist and get an ADHD diagnosis for their child, they can join a side group, a thread of moms who have just gotten ADHD diagnoses for their kids. That one specific thing. I have probably like almost 40 threads at this point. And every time a mom says, is there anybody else here who? I say, let's find out. Let's make a thread. We now have everything from picky eaters to anger and aggression to OCD in children, OCD in moms, neurodivergent partners, neurodivergent moms, highly sensitive moms, autism, sensory processing disorder, PDA, ADHD. Like I could go on and on. There's like 40. And when moms want to expand their web past that pod squad, past that home base, I say, what topics are you interested in? Here's a list of what we got. And they join those threads and they go, oh my gosh, I didn't meet you yet, but you live like 30 minutes away from me and your kid has sensory processing disorder and is the same age as mine. Holy moly, let's meet up. It's instant. That changes everything in the mother's mindset. It's the most magical thing to watch.
I'm just happy that you created that community. I think that's pretty cool that you have done that.
I am doing what I needed. I am fulfilling my own needs too. I needed the friends and I needed the understanding and the no judgment and the connections. That's why I did it, because I needed it. But now it just keeps growing and it's clear that I'm not the only one who needed that. I consider each and every one of them a friend, all 100 plus. And the first thing that I do is I send them a private message. We use the Marco Polo video messaging app so that we can see each other's faces and hear each other's tones. It's way different from just like a text. And we start up private polos when someone joins and I'm just like, hi, I truly, from the bottom of my heart, I have been waiting years to meet you. I am so freaking glad that you're here. I can't wait to get to know you. What kind of support do you need? Let's be friends. And it hasn't failed me yet. So I talk to them every single day. They've had multiple messages just sitting here that they've left for me and they leave for each other. We lift each other. We absolutely lift each other up. And that's what we've been needing the whole time. Yeah, it's awesome. I just love it.
Just understanding and support.
Yeah, with no judgment, no questions asked. We get it. We all get it.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Megan is always looking for moms to be on her podcast.
Every single week, a mom, a regular old mom, comes onto the show and shares what it's like to raise a neurodivergent kid. And these stories, the moms always say, I don't know if I have anything profound to say. I don't know if I have a story. I'm like, no, you do. You absolutely do. And sure enough, every mom, they tell their story. And the wisdom is there. The love is there. The confidence is there. They can't always see it, but I can hear it. So I would say that I am always looking for guests, because to keep the podcast moving, we have to be have moms who are brave and vulnerable enough to share those raw stories.
She's also in the process of creating a course to help moms.
I'm going to launch it early, like hopefully January of 2023, for moms who are raising neurodivergent kids who are looking to come to that inner peace, that inner acceptance and understanding of themselves. And I'm building a whole program around it.
You can find Megan at www.onthehardays.com and her support group at onthehardays.com/motherstogether. She's also very active on Instagram at onthehardays. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I need your help. To help this show get in front of more mom listeners who might benefit from these stories, please follow, rate, and review the podcast. Go to mamaihearyou.com on whatever device you use to listen to your podcasts and click on the button that says rate this show. That's mamaihearyou.com. Also at mamaihearyou.com, there is one of my favorite things. You can record your answer to the fun question of the month, such as, where do all the missing socks go? The answers will be pieced together in upcoming episodes with some of the best answers shared on Mama I Hear You's Instagram page and in the Facebook group. And finally, I would love to hear from you. At the website, you can leave me an audio message about the show or just motherhood in general, as well as fill out a short form if you'd like to share your own motherhood story on the show. Thank you again for listening, and I look forward to connecting with you.